That was a good reading of the scripture. Good job. You know, I just have this idea. We need to run downtown here, right on Highway 101 here, and put up a big billboard that says, come on over to the Arcata Seventh-day Adventist Church for a really good bunch of music and some good fellowship, don't you think? Oh my goodness, that song service is as good as it gets. Who's the piano player? What's that? Is that? Good. Nah, you're amazing. I kept thinking he was reading music. I look over, there ain't a bit of music up there. He's just playing the, oh my goodness. And then I was happily sitting right in front of that JBL speaker. And all the music was just fabulous. Oh my goodness, we should probably just go out there and holler and say, come on in and listen to this good stuff. This is, man, you could go anywhere, and it wouldn't be any better than it is right here. That's the deal. As we were driving up the hill this morning, my wife goes, I used to ride Buck right across there. And then she said, we used to live right here. I used to explore all over here. And what you may or may not know is that my wife, Tina Tilstra Heinrich, my last name is Heinrich, her maiden name is Tilstra, her father, Reinhold Tilstra, was the one who bought this land right here and then helped get it started. I don't think he was around when it was built, but I remember hearing Tina tell me the story that when Reinhold had the vision for this piece of property, the church board said, well, I don't know, that's a lot of money. And I have no idea what that money was. But was it? I mean, I don't know. It was at the time, it seemed like a whole bunch. And they were like, I don't think we can do it. And Reinhold has passed away, but I knew him well. He was a doer, and if he got something going in his mind, he did it. He found a way. So he goes to the church board. My wife tells me that this is not apocryphal. This is really true. He went to the church board and said, look, here's the deal. We're going to buy that land, and I'm going to live in... Tina, where was the house? Right over here? Is it this very little house? This very little house. You lived in that very little house, right there, and rode Buck the horse. Right across before the church was built. And Reinhold went to the church board. He goes, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to buy the land. I will move into the parsonage and pay rent, which will cover the mortgage on the church, and that's the way we'll do it. And that is how we got this beautiful, beautiful church. And then later, I don't know if you guys remember Margaret and John Tilster. Is that a name that rings a bell? Margaret just passed away just not too long ago up in Walla Walla. And just as spry a gal, she was baking cookies and making Indian food till right there at the end. I tell you, she could make. Did any of you ever get to eat any of her Indian food? Do you like that yellow curry? Now that there's eating right there. You get up early in the morning, it wouldn't taste any better than that. I promise you, man. So just a wonderful bunch of memories as I drove up to be here this morning. I come from Leone Meadows, which. You know, you can't get too much farther away from Leone Meadows and still be in our conference than you are here. In fact, have any of you ever been to Leone Meadows? Is there one or two? Okay, there's a few of you. Well, what you may or may not know is we had 960 acres. Now, I'm a storyteller, so I will always try and make it sound bigger. So if you ask me how many acres you have at Leone, I'll say, well, we got about 1,000. That sounds a lot better than 960, doesn't it? I got a thousand acres. You're a small little piece of land out there in El Dorado County. It's just this little bit of wooded acreage there. Well, as you know, Leone, or you may or may not know, but Leone was this amazing, beautiful forest. We had 1,000 acres, and Brandon knows. I mean, you guys lived there for years. Beautiful, beautiful trees. Not unlike the trees you have here, except we had mainly ponderosa pine. As I look around, these look more like maybe Doug fir and maybe redwood, a lot of redwood, I would assume, because of the coastal rain. And some of these trees for us, now you guys up here, I remember the day. Do you guys remember the day when a log truck would pull through town with one log on one? They might. Maybe they still do. I don't know. Back in the day, though. No, that's been a while. Now, I remember I grew up in Reading, and I remember the log trucks would come through town, and there would truly be one log, and sometimes they might put a piddly little log about that big next to it, you know. I was wondering, you know, what kind of a piece of equipment would it take to lift that log off that trailer? But man, God made some amazing stuff, didn't he? Man, just beautiful. But Leone, as you may know, it had a fire here just about a year and a half ago, just a little less than a year and a half. It's been a year and a half ago. And the lead up to it was, for the last 30, 40 years, we, as anybody who's ever been part of Leone, have been saying, it's not if the fire's coming, it's when it's going to come. We had just gotten done with a wonderful summer camp season. We had, you know, probably one of the biggest camps we'd ever had. I think we had 2,500 guests over that summer, just a bunch of them. And we had fun. We swam in the pool. We went up and shot archery. We rode the horses and, you know, played in the creek in the pond with the canoes. Just had a wonderful time. Camp got over, and about 1 week later, I was down at the constituency meeting for Northern California. Actually, for the Union, the Pacific Union, was down in Arizona. And about 5:30 in the morning, I got a text Sunday morning from one of the guys that works with me, Eric Kent. He texted me. He goes, "Oh, there's a little fire down at the Consumnes River." And he said, "I don't think it's anything. The fire department's out there, and you know, don't worry about coming back." So I immediately packed up and went back. I mean, literally, I tried to get a flight, couldn't. My wife and I, we just called the rental agency of our car and said, "Look, we're going to take this beautiful Dodge Charger all the way to Sacramento. We'll turn it in there." And they said, "Okay, that'll be an extra charge." And we said, "That's okay." And we took off. I got back to camp about Sunday night, I think it was, about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Of course, everybody's still up. And I'm talking to them, and they're still saying, you know, "We don't think the fire's going anywhere. We think it's going to set right here." And so we went to bed, got up about 5 or 6 o'clock Monday morning. Fire was still down. If you've been to Leone, it was, if you look out from the main lodge there across the meadow, there's a ridge there. Down in the canyon, there's a little creek called the Dogtown Creek. Then you go up over a little ridge over into the Consumnes River Gorge, and that's where the fire was. So early Monday morning, we jumped in a little Polaris Ranger and zipped down, and sure enough, there was a small little 30, 40, 50-acre fire burning down there, still a long ways from camp. And so we thought, we better evacuate everybody. So we went back to camp. We got everybody out of camp except for the staff that were there. And we were waiting to see if the fire would take off. And if you've read and probably heard, there was a lot of trouble between the Forest Service and CAL FIRE and who they were bickering over, who was going to get to take the glory of putting out this fire. Turns out neither one of them got the glory because it got out of control. So we start preparing. We evacuate all the animals. We have a couple of big Percheron draft horses. Big old guys. They're about 1,800 hand style. They're just huge. And a neighbor friend of ours just drove up in her. She had a trailer, truck and trailer. She pulls up. She goes, "I'm taking your horses." And I said, No. "This fire's not going anywhere." She goes, "I'm taking your horses. You can get them back when the fire's over." She hauled them out. We hauled everything out. And we had a big farm tractor with a big old disc plow on it. And we just took the front of the meadow view in, that whole meadow, and we just turned that into a fire break. It was just dirt. It was probably 50 feet across, maybe 1,000 feet long. And we thought, "Oh, yeah, we're pretty ready for this fire. This, you know, what can fire do with a little bit of, you know, a lot of bare dirt? It isn't going to burn." So we thought we were safe. Well, that evening, we went down. Two or three things of note. If you were there, and I know the Laporte family knows this well, We jumped in the Polaris Ranger and went back down to Dogtown Creek, where we used to swim with the kids on Sabbath afternoon, or we would wait. I think we waited is what we actually did, just depending on how you feel about that. It was awful hot. Listen, it's hot there. I got to tell you, it gets real hot at Leo. It's hot enough that the kids got to cool them off a little bit. But it was a creek, and it was natural. And, oh, we used to play in this water, just a beautiful waterfall, and the kids would all go sit under the waterfall. And it was just wonderful. But we went down there. We got down about halfway down that road. And there's a cliff that goes right down to the water. And I hear this boom, 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 boom. I look out, and here's one of these big double rotor Sikorsky helicopters comes by. And we're on a cliff, and he is probably not much more than from here to the lobby of your church here. And he's dropping water. And I happened to be with the fire chief from our little fire department. He was a good friend of mine. He's sitting there, and we're just loving this. And we're taking pictures, and we're just feeling like we're great big firemen, and this is going to be a fun time. About that time, this other fireman, who I did not know at the time, young guy, his name was Buck. Buck drives up in an old utility fire truck, and we're on a very narrow road with no turnouts. And before he gets out and talks to us, he makes a 50-point turn, turns his car around, leaves it running, and he gets out and he walks over to the chief and I, and he goes, "You have no business being here. You get out of here right now. This is about to go boom." And, of course, the hair on my neck stood up, and I, okay, we're out of here. And I yelled. We all jumped in. We all went scrambling back up. And just moments later, that fire went rushing out of the canyon at, I don't know, very fast. We went over to the camp, and I had an ex fire chief from Cal Fire with me. He's a friend of mine. Lloyd Ogan was there. And we're sitting in the Meadowview, or in the main lodge, in one of the meeting rooms, and we look out across the meadow, and it is as bright as day. It is just, except it's got a very red, smoky hue to it. And I look over at Lloyd, and I say, "Is it time to go?" And he says, "It's time to go." So as the fire was coming across the meadow, I jumped in my car and headed for my home, which is just a few miles from Leoni. And Eric and a couple of the other guys decided they wanted to stay to the end. An interesting note was, right at this juncture, Cal Fire rolled into Leoni Meadows with a battalion strength of firefighters. And what that means, I don't know what that means, but visually, it was probably 10 fire engines, a couple of bulldozers, and maybe 50 to 100 men and women firefighters. And I was thinking, oh, goodness, the cavalry is here. We are going to be saved. Everything is going to be fine. I jumped in my car, headed for home, and I went out to the front gate. There's a big wooden sign that says, Leoni Meadows Camp. The bottom says, owned and operated by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I jumped out of my car, and I turned back, and there's embers of burning ash falling around me, and the forest is beginning to ignite. And tears start coming down my face as I said, this will be the last time that I ever see Leoni Meadows like it was. Got in my car. I had a little two-way radio that I could talk to Eric and the two or three guys, four guys that were going to stay. And just as I pulled into my driveway, I hear Eric say, "Craig, we're leaving too. Everything's on fire. We got to go." And they pulled out. They went out and truly, the forest was completely on fire. They're driving out through, just active flames. When they came over to my house and helped me evacuate my house, and they were saying, we don't think anything's going to be left. He said about 30 seconds after you left, the entire battalion of Cal Fire, without telling us, loaded up, packed up, and left. And left Leoni completely unguarded. And I just said, well, then I guess that's it. We'll all be looking for jobs when this is over. Well, little time went by, a day or so, and we figured out that the law enforcement hadn't completely figured out how to block off all the intricate roads to Leone Meadows. And so my wife and I may have snuck back into camp against medical advice. And we get there, and the first thing I drive into camp, and everything is still smoldering. Everything is still on fire. It's just not an active, huge, crowning fire, but there's fire everywhere. And I drive in, and the first thing I see is the sign, and it still says, Leone Meadows Camp, owned and operated by the Northern California Conference. I think, wow. And I drive around the corner, and Terry Bolton's house, it was still standing. I thought that'd be the first to burn. And I'm going, hey, man, this isn't so bad. And I drive and I look over and the shop is still standing. I'm going, hey, this is cool. And I drive a little further. The craft building didn't make it. I'm like, well, we didn't need that. We'll get a new one. That's no big deal. And I keep driving. And pretty soon I realize that, you know, we lost a bunch of stuff. But everything that we needed to do ministry at Leone Meadows was still there. Amazing. The cafeteria caught on fire, but there was a couple, you know, there's not enough time to tell you all the many things, but there, this Buck guy, remember I told you about Buck? And the chief. The chief called Buck on the chief stayed. He was the only guy that stayed at Leone. The chief called Buck, and he's screaming over the radio, I need you here now, we're all going to die, it's going to be horrible. Buck thinks the chief is dying. So he fights his way back up the Leone Road from Grizzly Flats. Turns out Chief just wanted some help managing the fire at Leone. He wasn't hurt a bit. And you think about how God takes care of it. This is another little funny little story. There was a Cal Fire fireman on one of that left that had to evacuate when Cal Fire left. They got out to Grizzly, and he went to his battalion chief and goes, look it, let me take some guys back and go back and let me see if we can defend Leone. And the battalion said, the chief said, nope, can't do it. The guy said, come on. He goes, okay, how many do you need? He goes, I need four engines. The guy said, I'll give you two. So two engines plus Buck and the fire chief were there at Leone during the firestorm that should have taken the whole camp. They divided up. A couple of the firemen went over to the hotel unit. It caught on fire, burned from the first floor clear. It should have burned completely down. They took those really cool fireman axes. They went in there, took all the sheetrock down, squirted water till the water was gone. Then they went down to the pool. The pool house was burning, actively burning, and they took water out of the pool. In their trucks, went back up. The cafeteria catches on fire. That wooden deck, completely blazing. This guy says it was so smoky that his chainsaw wouldn't start. He said it was just not enough oxygen. And he and his buddy tore up about 100 feet of wooden walkway and kept the cafeteria from burning. During COVID, who would have thought COVID would have been a blessing? During COVID, we had to shut Leone down for a year. So the whole year I had nothing to do with my staff. So I said, hey, how about this? We take rakes and we take nippers and we clean up the entire interior of Leone and we burn and get ready for a fire. What do you think? So we did. Which meant we, out of 20 cabins, 16 of them survived. Amazing! When it was all over, I was driving up. You guys know where Logan's Grade is? I know some of us do. I was coming down Logan Grade. I wasn't supposed to be there, and there was a fire truck parked right in the middle of Logan's Grade, putting out a fire that was coming up the hill. And I thought I recognized Buck. And so I stopped the car and I jumped out and I ran over and I go, and I'm just a little guy. I'm not very big at all. I come running up to him and I go, are you Buck? And Buck turns to me and goes, who's asking? Because he did not recognize me. And he thought I wanted to beat him up or something. I said, no, Buck, I'm Craig from Leone Meadows. I said, you are... And he just went off and told me story after story of how true bravery and God's grace saved Leone Meadows from complete and utter destruction. About 3 months later, we had a party at my house, and we invited the entire community to come to the house to celebrate. We had to celebrate the firemen who had helped put out the fire at Leone. And I had heard through the grapevine that while Leonie was burning and while Buck was putting out the fires, his house burned to the ground in Grizzly Flats. And so I went to the conference, to my little committee that I report to, and I said, "Hey guys, what do you think we give a gift to Buck?" And they said, "Sure. Will $100 do?" I said, "No." I said, "I want this gift to hurt. I want you guys to dig deep." And they said, "Greg, what do you think?" And I have to say, they were with me on this. I said, "I want to give him $10,000. They said, "Do it." So that day we presented Buck with a $10,000 check for being an angel of God in a moment of trying and incredible devastation. He put his stuff on hold to be the servant of God, to help keep the Leonie Meadows ministry going. Give me five more minutes. That's what I want to say. I mean, just, there's so many things about Leonie that God just kind of went, "Come here, you little rascal. I'm going to save this thing. This is my place. Quit whining about it." But I want to close with just it's nothing to do with the fire. It's just a passion of me. And it's just something I want to, let me just tell you this quick story, and then we'll close with that. Is that fair? Can we do that? Okay, here's the way it works. My brother Eddie and I love to scuba dive. We plan our life around going to Kona. And the reason we go to Kona on the Big Island is because it's cheap and it's good diving. And we have figured out how for about $500 or $600 for 8 days, we can go over, fly over, eat, scuba dive, play, and come home. In fact, I tell my wife, it's cheaper than me staying at home. She doesn't believe it, but it's still my story. Anyway, we were over there diving, and I had taken a pretty decent fall. You know, you get all the scuba gear off and on, and we weren't boat diving. We were shore diving, so which meant we had to crawl over rocks and get down and get in the water. And almost down to the water, I slipped and fell, and I'm a big guy, and then you put another 80 pounds of weight on your back, and then you fall, and I fell right on my tailbone. And I heard this little pop, 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 pop. And I thought, ooh, that can't be good. You shouldn't hear popping sounds and feeling these sounds in your back. So I rolled around, thrashed around, finally decided I'd live. But for the next month or two, I had a pretty sore back. So as we got on our airplane to fly over to Maui to then take another airplane to fly back to Sacramento, I was sitting kind of gingerly there in the lounge waiting to board the airplane when we finally got permission to get on the airplane, and I kind of walked down. And I have a couple of things. I don't have to have them, but I really like them. I like to sit by an exit, and I like to sit by the aisle. You can have any other plane. I mean, first class. I mean, I love first class, don't get me wrong. But if I have to choose, I want an aisle seat by an exit door. So it was a 767. I think those have, is it two seats on each side and four in the middle, or three and four in the middle. I can't remember which. And I was sitting in the very last, they had blocked off three or four seats in the middle section, and then I guess there was two or three rows behind me that had people in them, on the right-hand side. There was nobody sitting between my brother and I, and he was sitting on the opposite side, two empty seats between us, and he was sitting right over here. We get ready to take off, and I just love takeoff, because especially when you've been in Hawaii, you're kind of mellow. I have my seatbelt on, and the airplane takes off, and the G's kind of just set you back. You can't, you know, when you're just normally flying, you're not accelerating, you can, if you're not careful, your mouth can drop forward and slobber can run. I've never had that happen, but it can happen. So that initial 10-minute takeoff thing is just, I go to sleep, I get a little cat nap. So I lean back, take off, we're coming out of Maui, fully loaded with however much fuel the 767 takes, Hawaiian Airlines, hooky loud music playing in the background. I'm in my happy place. And all of a sudden, I heard or felt or something wasn't right. And I open my eyes and I look, and sure enough, all of the flight attendants have jumped up, and they're kind of, you can tell they're agitated, and they're walking around the aisles, and there's noise, there's dings and dongs going off, phones being answered, and And I reach over, and Eddie was asleep. And I said, hey, wake up. I said, something isn't right. I said, I don't know what it is, but something isn't right. About that time, the pilot throttled back. We were still long before 10,000 feet. He leveled off, and about 3 minutes into the flight, he says, ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing some issues here on the airplane. You know, they always have that Chuck Yeager sound. You know what I'm saying? It's like the whole world is burning and crashing and bombs are going off, but Chuck Yeager, we're at 33,000 feet and we got, you know, they're just calm in the face of adversity. Inside, my blood pressure went from high to higher. And there's just, like, I'm ready to run up there and fly the plane myself should I need to, and I know nothing about flying airplanes. So he finishes by saying, we are smelling smoke in the cockpit. We don't know where it's coming from. We're going to have to go back. I thought, okay, back's good. Let's get that right. Yeah, let's just turn right around. And then the crazy pilot has the audacity to say, we can't just land because we got all this fuel, and I guess the planes are so heavy that they can't just come right around and land after taking off because they've got all the fuel on board and things might go bad. So we flew around as the smoke began to whiff down the aisle, and I'm in the very back, and I'm just like crawling out of my skin. And I take my cell phone, and we're in intermittent cell service, and so I type out a text. I don't send it, but I say basically to my wife, hey, this has been good. I love you. My last thoughts were of you and the girls. And then I just held my finger over the send button in case things should go bad. We looked out the tip of the wings, and there's fuel coming out. I guess they dump it somehow. I don't know how it works, but they were dumping. Finally, after about 10 or 15 minutes, the pilot says, okay, we're going in. He goes, I don't know what to expect. He said, we're going to go in just real gentle. It should be an easy touchdown, and then I'll let you know what we're going to do after that. So we did. We came in right there in Maui. He came just the most beautiful, wonderful landing. Comes in, and we land, and I look out the window, both right and left, and there's fire trucks, of course, both sides of the runway all the way down. The smell is finally reaching us, and we're excited to be on the ground. At least I go, well, at least now I have a fighting chance. As we get to and the pilot did not put on the brakes. He just let the thing run clear down to the end of the Maui runway, clear at the very end. Like he's almost jumping into the parking lot to go to Costco. When he finally slowed down and we made a left-hand turn and then made another left-hand turn on the taxiway, and then it's like something crazy happened. He slams on the brakes. We all kind of rock, and he goes, evacuate, evacuate, evacuate. And immediately, well, you don't have to tell me twice, the flight attendants jump up, and they all run. This is a big airplane. There's two big exits in the back. There's two or three in the middle, and there's two or three in the front. There's lots of them. They open the door, and this big slide comes out. And I'm like number 10 in line to get out that slide with my poor back. And they say, jump, jump, jump. And I'm like, I'm not going to jump. I'm going to break my back. So as I'm standing in the aisle, I'm thinking all this stuff through. I left everything but my cell phone. I had stuck it in my pocket. As I'm getting out of the airplane, there was a guy at the door, and he turns around. He was about 35. He turns around, and he starts fighting his way back up the aisle into what we thought was a burning plane. And I thought, that idiot, that guy. I thought, he is not getting through me. I fill the aisle, not proudly, but I fill the aisle, and I put my arm out and kind of put my hands on each seat, on each side, as if to say, you're coming through me only one way, and that's a dead body. You're not getting by me. He gets right up into my face, and he goes, excuse me. I go, no. And I'm thinking he'll get the idea. I thought he was going back for luggage, you know, or something. So I just say no. And he goes, fine. And he dives over the seats. And he's crawling. He's crawling down the seats trying to get around me. And I'm going, that is the stupidest guy I've ever seen in my life. And then he goes, hey, give him to me. And he reaches out. And his wife, who was about three seats back, reached forward and handed him their baby. And all of a sudden, I remembered the sweet love of Jesus Christ. How that going back into a burning camp, into a burning plane, into a crumbling world, was what Jesus Christ, the master and creator of this universe, did for you and me. And that love is boundless. That love is incredible. And that is my story, and I'm sticking to it. Let's pray. Father, I just want to thank you so much for loving us and for this church and the music we heard and the blessings that we have had just for being in this place worshiping you today. Thank you for the miracles that you did at Leone. Thank you for the love of your son. And someday soon may we see you in heaven, we pray.